Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ryan. Welcome to what I'm calling a one-off review. I'm going to be doing these periodically outside of the regular schedule of the for the Radio Live Transmission podcast. I'm probably going to do these anytime I feel like I don't really have the time or the means to produce another entire episode. For example, for the month of July. I've been putting together some special episodes that I'm going to be releasing every week this month. So I really wanted to do a review of this new Fleet Foxes album called Crack Up, which came out recently. But I didn't necessarily have enough resources and other albums that I wanted to do reviews of to make a whole episode out of it. So I decided to just do this as a one-off review. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. So the new Fleet Foxes album is called Crack Up. It was released on June 16th on None Such Records. It's Fleet Foxes' third studio album, and it was produced by Robin Pecknold and Skylar Skeljet, who are both obviously members of Fleet Foxes and pretty much the creative nucleus of the band. So Crack Up, which is Fleet Foxes' third album and their first new material in 6 years, picks up where Helplessness Blues from 2010 left off, but it travels far beyond the reaches that release hinted at in its more progressive moments. Crack Up is the type of exploratory record this listener had hoped for after Fleet's six-year hiatus, in which frontman Robin Pecknold spent some time as a student at New York City's Columbia University. Too many artists, just slog through their careers without really taking any time to build perspective and channel, their growth and the progression of their maturity levels into their art. But both musically and lyrically, Crack Up manages to look outward and inward, exploring the past and present relationship of Pecknold and Skylar. All right, so why don't we talk about the tracks? So the first track is called I Am All That I Need / Arroyo Seco / Thumbprint Scar. The dynamic of the trademark Fleet Foxes sound versus Robin Pecknold's sort of Leonard Cohen-ish rumblings and the quote-unquote found sound elements in this tune create a vision of almost like two bands. That you have Pecknold on one side, you have an image of this sort of solitary artist, and then on the other side there's there's sort of like the rest of the band, and they're working separately. Up until about four and a half minutes into the track, when suddenly everything coalesces, and that's the point at which this track starts to really sound like the Fleet Foxes that we all know. Lyrically, the track paints a picture of a character moving from a place of self-reliance into a more familiar and comfortable situation of partnership. And a more collective atmosphere, which really fits the music well. The two definitely complement each other very, very well on this track. Pecknold uses an interesting sample at the end of this song, and the sample, it's a little bit tricky, hearing it at first, being able to discern what it is, but the sample is of a high school chorus from Brooklyn, New York, performing the song White Winter Hymnal, which was one of Fleet Fox's hits off their first album, their self-titled album. Pecknold had posted that video on his Instagram before, so it the sample lends itself well to this idea that Crack Up as an album is a record that looks both to the past and to the future. So pretty interesting, and like I said, it sort of slipped by me at first. I knew there was this sort of odd sample of some sort of chorus or choral arrangements singing something and just using hand claps as percussion or whatever, but I couldn't tell what it was at first. I really had to listen closely. So That was interesting. So from that track, the album moves into the second track, which is called Cassius. Now, this track is definitely more straightforward, both musically and just aesthetically, you know, in general. Pecknold has pointed out that the name Cassius refers to both a person who was called Gaius Cassius Longinus, who was a Roman senator who was involved in the plot to murder Julius Caesar. And the name can also refer to Cassius Clay, who obviously changed his name to Muhammad Ali. So there's another track later on in the album that's called I Should See Memphis, which also references both figures. I'll talk about that when we get to that. And there's also some interesting allusions, possible allusions in this song, to the killing of Alton Sterling, who was a 37-year-old black man, by police in Baton Rouge. And it also sort of alludes to the subsequent protests that erupted across the nation as a result of that killing, and a lot of the other police-related killings of the past couple of years. So Pecknold definitely he uses his sort of trademark, sort of cryptic, very very poetic, very high-minded lyrics to sort of insert those references in, or those like I said, those possible allusions, without being overt about it. It's very subtle. So there's a lot of layers of meaning that you have to sort of, you're gonna have to do a little bit of digging to really get at the heart of, the lyrics that Pecknold writes and a lot of the references that are in there. So from Cassius, the album moves into the track, and I'm definitely going to mispronounce this, I think. But the third track is called Naiads. The name is spelled N-A-I-A-D-S, Naiads. Naiads and Cassidies. So Naiads are mythical water nymphs in Greek mythology. And Cassidies, that is derived from the name Cassius. So, you have this sort of running thread of reference that goes through most of the album here. Pecknold has stated that this song is really about the relationship between men and women, and most of the imagery in the song's lyrics point to the idea that, women are often closed in and isolated by traditional gender roles and unrealistic body image and things of that nature in a, in a such a dominant patriarchal type society. Pecknold uses the image of a flower as a sort of a symbol of seeming delicacy and remarkable resiliency at the same time to enhance a sort of dichotomous view of women that, seems to persist in, our society and just, has been a sort of persistent image throughout, the past couple thousand years. So, and longer, I'm sure. Both this track and Cassius, as I mentioned, are definitely more straightforward musically. There's a little less, experimentation, a little more traditional sort of sound that you expect from Fleet Foxes. So I found it very interesting that Pecknold decided to open the album with such a sort of progressive and, odd in many ways track. But I think it definitely sets up, sets up the sort of aesthetic of the album, which, is sort of a combination of the previous iterations of Fleet Foxes and this sort of, like I said, a little bit more progressive folk that Pecknold seems to be wanting to go for more on this record. So from Naiads Cassidies, the album moves into the track Kept Woman. Now this is an interesting song title. A quote unquote kept woman is a woman who exchanges sexual favors for food and shelter. The narrator in the song seems hopeful of a reconciliation with a character whose name is Anna, who suffers from a quote unquote nameless shame and appears lost in a shadow. Those are references from the lyrics. This song, it definitely changes pace and mood. We go from, a little bit more, I don't want to say lighthearted, but a little less serious mood with the last track, and then you move into Kept Woman, which definitely there's definitely more of an air of regret and lamentation, I guess a longing, I would say. So, and I think the sound of the music on the track definitely lends itself to that too. It's slower, it's a little bit more mournful, I feel like, and it hits that, yeah, it definitely hits that introspective note. Fleet Foxes know how to sort of channel as well as they do. And from Kept Woman, the album moves into the track 3rd of May slash Odeygahara. Probably mispronounced that too, but that's okay. All right, so the first part of the song title here is a reference to both Skylar Skeljit's birthday and a painting by the artist Francisco de Goya, which was a painting called 3rd of May 1808, which depicts Spanish captives being executed by French soldiers during the Peninsula War of 1808. Now, to me, the idea of this song, lyrically, detailing Pecknold's estrangement and reconciliation with Skylar and the rest of Fleet Foxes, it pairs interestingly with the sort of counter idea or an idea that sort of is sort of laid over the idea of the estrangement and the reconciliation. This idea of captives of war, being killed, especially the idea of a quote unquote firing line. It's yet another example of Pecknold, just piling on the layers of meaning and reference. Now, the name Odeygahara, that is a reference to a mountain in Japan, and the song's instrumental breakdown, which comes at the end, evokes Japanese musical modes and textures. So the idea behind the long instrumental passage at the end of the song, as Pecknold has talked about a little bit, is a sort of a transition from the typical Fleet Foxes sound into a sort of, a musical, I don't want to say a devolution, but a sort of, there's a musical shift and things just sort of break up and kind of shoot off in a lot of different directions all at once and sort of fade away. So to me, the choice of a seemingly foreign place as an image in this song that deals with estrangement, as I said, and reconciliation works really well to evoke a feeling, a surreal feeling, that one would feel when he or she has found themselves in a familiar situation after growing and maturing. So being in a similar, a familiar situation, but being a slightly different person in that situation. So I think the image of the mountain in Japan, this foreign setting definitely lends itself well to that lyrical idea, that lyrical theme. So after that track, the album moves into a track called If You Need To, Keep Time on Me. Now, I interpret this song as, a pledge by Pecknold, to help uphold the symbiotic relationship between himself and Skylar and the rest of the band. So like I said, it's a pledge to make sure that relationship stays strong, that relationship between friends, between musicians, between performers. So the song can also be seen as a bit of a rumination on the fallout of the band split and the departure of Josh Tillman, who, if you don't know, is the artist who, you know, works under the moniker Father John Misty. I actually reviewed his latest album on episode 5 of the podcast. That was an album called Pure Comedy. So there was some fallout there, and definitely seems like Pecknold could be referencing, you know, that departure of Tillman on this song. So kind of a interesting juxtaposition of, you know, both a positive outlook on the future of the band and a feeling of regret, a little bit of second guessing, I think, on you know, how the events of the past, you know, in particular the split of the band, might have gone down. So from that track, the album moves into a track called, here we go again with the pronunciations, it's Meerkstapa. That's Meerkstapa. Okay, so the title can mean a wanderer, and it's tied into the character of Grendel from Beowulf. The song's lyrics seem to allude to Pecknold's time away from his bandmates and his friends, presumably his time spent in New York City at Columbia University. The narrator in the song seems to conclude that, you know, this wanderer, this image of the wanderer, you know, without personal contact with others, he looks at that sort of lonely figure as a blind figure and a deaf figure, you know, somebody who is sort of, you know, isolated. Okay, so on the next track, which is called On Another Ocean, January/June, the narrator sort of describes these feelings of listlessness and regret that he's feeling while in an environment that he is not accustomed to. So it's sort of a continuation in a way of the lyrical themes of the previous track. Now, in the second part of the song, the narrator signals a change in setting, which is, you know, another ocean, which, you know, gives the listener, at least this listener, the idea that Pecknold is pointing to, you know, being on the coast of the Pacific Ocean, you know, being in Washington State, and then, you know, being in New York City, which is obviously on the other side of the country, on the eastern seaboard. So there's an easy sort of point of reference there, I think. And the narrator also explores a sort of attempt to live life, you know, as he was living before the upheaval, you know, and the fallout of the split of the band, which is, of course, impossible to do. So the song has an interesting sample at the end. It's a sample of a song called Tezeta. That's T-E-Z-E-T-A, which is a song by an Ethiopian jazz artist whose name is Mulatu Astaki. First name is M-U-L-A-T-U. Last name is A-S-T-A-T-K-E, if you want to look that up. And Pecknold has stated that this artist is one of several Ethiopian musicians who served as personal inspirations for him for this album, for Crack Up. So from that track, the album moves into the track Fool's Errand, which definitely seems to be the sort of radio hit. It's the single off of this album. I actually heard, oddly enough, I heard this track while I was at the dentist's office. I was waiting to go into the dentist's office, and I was writing my notes for this album, and Fool's Errand was playing on the radio. I thought that was kind of funny. So, but definitely, yeah, it has what I think is a sound that's very close to the Fleet Foxes that most people will know. And lyrically, you know, the song seems to be about the willingness of the narrator to chase after a dream, even though he knows that, you know, his own senses have lied to him before, that he can't really trust. They can't trust his senses. And that this chase, you know, is a futile one in a lot of ways. So Fool's Errand is, to me, you know, it's not my favorite track on the album. I'm definitely more of a fan of the tracks that are a little bit more progressive on the album, like the first track and also Third of May / Odega Hera. But Fool's Errand is certainly not a bad song at all. And it's definitely, you know, being the radio song, it's definitely going to get Fleet Foxes a lot of exposure, I think, which is great, you know, because this album is something that definitely needs to be listened to. So from Fool's Errand, the album moves into the track I Should See Memphis. Now, I had mentioned this track earlier because in the second track, that is where Pecknold first references two historical figures, both Gaius Cassius, who was a Roman senator, as I mentioned before, was involved in the plot to murder Caesar, and also Cassius Clay, as I said, changed his name to Muhammad Ali. There's also a couple other interesting references in the song, too, in the song. One is the song actually references the first major battle in the Civil War, which was First Manassas, and the last battle of the Civil War, which was Appomattox. There's a sort of duality, an interesting duality, to the idea of the song's narrator saying that he should see Memphis, because the name Memphis can obviously refer to the city in the state of Tennessee, and it can also reference the Egyptian city of Memphis, which is named after a water nymph, which ties back into the idea of the Naiads, which was another name that popped up earlier in the record. So there's a lot of sort of circuitous, you know, reference going on in this album. There's a lot of reminders of the important figures on the you know, the stage of this album. So, and Pecknold has also stated that a few of the songs on this album, particularly I Should See Memphis and If You Need to keep Time on Me, partially are also about the 2016 presidential election and a lot of the sort of negative feelings that people had after Trump won. So it's sort of definitely an album that can be interpreted a lot of ways, depending on, you know, your frame of mind, your frame of reference when you're listening to it, how close attention you're paying to the lyrics when you're listening to it. So it's definitely, like I said, multi-layered and very, very interesting. Sometimes it can get a little bit muddled, I think, but upon repeated listens, and like I said, with a little bit of research, you know, I would compare Pecknold as, you know, as a lyricist who is able to inject so much meaning into his tracks, so many layers of reference into his tracks. You know, I'd compare him in a certain way to somebody like James Joyce in his novel Ulysses, which was, you know, just an absolute treasure trove of meaning. Now, I'm not saying that Pecknold is the, you know, reincarnation of James Joyce and that he's on the same level as James Joyce, but the care that he takes with the various meanings that he plays around with in his lyrics feels Joycean to me. So that's something that I definitely appreciate, and I think a lot of people definitely could. So from I Should See Memphis, the album moves into the final track, which is also the title track, Crack Up. So the sort of, like I said, that theme of uncertainty and in some cases despair that a lot of Americans felt after the 2016 election, you know, is also played around within this song with a little bit more of a personal sense of uncertainty, you know, over the future of the band, you know, of Pecknold's band, Fleet Foxes, and his personal relationships. I think those two things are sort of, you know, layered one over the other in this song, in the lyrics to this song. And it's got some interesting, interesting sound, found sound stuff going on at the end of the track. You know, there's the sound of someone, after the music fades out, there's the sound of someone moving something around a room. And you hear, you know, some footsteps and stuff in it. You know, it not only reminds me of the found sound that's in the first track of the album, you know, which that definitely gives the album like a pretty cool symmetry, I think. Sort of brings it around full circle. And, you know, Pecknold has, he seems to have reached a reconciliation with Skylar and with his band by the end of the album. But he knows that nothing is guaranteed. And at the end of the day, you know, every man, every person has to stand alone. So I think definitely that theme, you know, that theme of finding reconciliation, but knowing that in the end, you know, every it's every person for themselves, basically, in a lot of ways, you know, that's definitely a theme that you can connect to, like I said, to the sort of atmosphere here in the U.S. after the election. And you can, you know, talk about, you can also think about how, you know, the fallout of a band, you know, of a group of friends and musicians, you know, how the idea ties into that too. So all in all, it's a pretty, pretty sort of vivid mural that, that Pecknold paints with the lyrics. And I feel as though the music on Crack Up is also enough of a step forward that the album doesn't feel like, you know, a rehash in any sense of the previous two albums. There's elements of the sound of the previous two albums in here on Crack Up, but it's in no way a step backwards, or, you know, just a sort of there's no stagnation. You know, there Fleet Foxes is definitely moving forward in a direction that I find very interesting, in a sort of progressive direction. You know, that's not something that happens as often in the genre of folk music, as you know, as it happens in a lot of other genres like metal and rock and everything. So it's definitely it's captivated my interest, and you know, I just hope that the band continue down this road, and I hope that they're able to you know, to keep things copacetic and everything, because they're a great band. I think they I think they're a sort of a rarity, you know, in music these days. So I gave the album a rating of 7.5 out of 10. And for suggested tracks, this is an album that you should just listen to all the way through. You really should. But if you want to just hear a couple of tracks just to sort of get a general sense of what the album sounds like, I would check out the track Kept Woman and also the track 3rd of May/Odegahera. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to this one-off review. The next release for July will be coming on the 15th, and that will be the first part of the spotlight on Joy Division that I recorded with two special guests who have been on the podcast before, Andy Usry and Nathan Andrews. So we had a lot of fun doing that, so look for that on the 15th. Thank you for listening, and I will catch you guys later.